February 25th through 27th. Experience game-changing solutions, connect with thousands of forward-thinking farmers, and explore innovations from over 400 companies, all focused on powering your farm forward with efficiency and profitability. Housing and registration opens November 6th. Don't miss 30 years of agricultural excellence in the heart of Texas.
We all hear the radio ads about the IRS. They tell you to be afraid, to be scared, and they try to frighten you into calling. I'm not here to do that. Tax Relief Advocates is different. TRA is here to tell you that if you owe money to the IRS, whether it's $5,000, $50,000, or $500,000, we have a solution. It doesn't matter if you're sitting in your car, at work, or with your kids, no matter where you are, call now. 800-507-9624. Don't lose hope. TRA can eliminate or reduce what you owe to the IRS. Generous programs are now available that can give you a fresh start. Our passion is taxes and helping individuals fix their IRS problems.
We have over 1,000 five-star reviews on Google and an A-plus with the Better Business Bureau.
You don't need to be afraid of the IRS any longer. End your tax nightmare today by visiting us online at TRA.com or call 800-507-9624. That's 800-507-9624. Tax Relief Advocates. Real solutions for real people.
You're listening to WRGN, 1430 AM, Durand, Mondovi, Wabasha, and 107.3 FM at Translator W297CH, Durand.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. A vote is expected in the Senate this afternoon on a clean funding bill to end the government shutdown. It's also likely to fail again, with lawmakers at odds over restoring health care benefits, clawed back in the GOP mega bill. Here's ABC's Jay O'Brien.
Speaker Johnson said the work of the House of Representatives is done, and he sent his chamber home, and they haven't been here for 3 weeks. So the House is out, meaning they couldn't take up any deal that was struck in the Senate unless they were to come back. So if there is legislation on those Obamacare tax credits or any other health care related deal that gets workshopped in the Senate and passed, right now the House isn't here to take it up.
Israel says it's identified three bodies of hostages returned Tuesday. The fourth body did not match DNA of any hostages. Israel closing the Rafah crossing today in Gaza, limiting aid, accusing Hamas of failing to return all dead hostages under the ceasefire agreement. On Wall Street, stocks are up on positive earnings reports today. This is ABC News. Today, Delaware's highest court is hearing arguments in a case challenging how much Tesla's Elon Musk gets paid.
Elon Musk's pay package was challenged by a Tesla shareholder in 2018 who argued the company's board violated its fiduciary duty by approving the multi-billion dollar plan. The lawsuit also said Musk's relationship with members of the board may have unfairly influenced the size of the package. Lawyers for Musk say shareholders were fully informed when they voted to approve the plan, and now the Delaware Court of Chancery has to rule on questions about Musk's influence and how informed shareholders were. Mike Dubusky, ABC News.
Several major companies in recent years have shifted their incorporations out of Delaware following a series of court decisions. Two hikers are recovering in the hospital after a run-in with a grizzly bear. The attack happening on a trail in British Columbia, Canada, after the hikers encountered a bear and her two cubs. An investigation, wildlife officials determined the bear's actions were defensive. Michelle Franzen, ABC News.
I'm still going for it, even with higher stroke risk from atrial fibrillation and a regular heartbeat not caused by a heart valve problem. Over a 3-year study, Eliquis apixaban tablets reduced stroke risk better than warfarin, and over 97% of Eliquis patients did not experience a stroke. A first stroke occurred in 2.9% of warfarin patients versus 2.3% of Eliquis patients.
Don't stop prescription Eliquis without asking your doctor. Stroke risk may increase. Eliquis can cause serious and potentially fatal bleeding. Don't take if you have an artificial heart valve, abnormal bleeding, or antiphospholipid syndrome. While taking, you may bruise more easily or bleed longer. A spinal injection increases blood clot risk, which may cause paralysis. Get medical help right away for unexpected bleeding or bruising, or back pain, tingling, numbness, muscle weakness, or incontinence. Aspirin products, NSAIDs, SSRIs, SNRIs, and blood thinners increase bleeding risk. Tell your doctor about planned medical or dental procedures. Learn more at Eliquis.com or call 1-855-ELIQUIS.
Wisconsin Radio Network News, I'm Ted Ayler. A bill requiring Wisconsin school districts have policies to restrict students' cell phone use during instructional time is ready for Governor Tony Evers to consider. Appleton Republican Rachel Cabral Guevara is the Senate author.
This bill requires school boards to put a policy in place that will restrict cell phone use during instructional time but with the understanding that if the teacher okays it, the students can use their cell phone for educational purposes.
A survey by the State Department of Public Instruction found most school districts already have policies in place, and it's unclear if Evers will sign the bill into law. A Blue Mounds woman charged with killing her mother pleads guilty.
According to online court records, 31-year-old Sierra Schoonover pleaded guilty, but not guilty by reason of insanity, to a charge of first-degree intentional homicide. A criminal complaint stated that a neighbor called 911 after seeing Schoonover and her mother, Heather Schoonover, fighting in their driveway before Schoonover sped off after the fight. When authorities arrived at the home, they found Schoonover's mother in a bathroom with multiple stab wounds. Authorities then found Sierra Schoonover near a crashed vehicle, naked, with a frothy substance on her mouth and dried blood on her hand. Sean Maloney, Wisconsin Radio Network.
A new study shows gun violence against minorities is rising in Wisconsin.
A report from the Wisconsin Anti-Violence Effort and the Violence Policy Center shows 762 people died by guns in 2023. That includes 502 suicides and 236 homicides. Wave says deaths among Hispanics have increased over 50% from 2021 to 2023, and suicides among Black Wisconsinites have tripled since 2018. Black residents are also 40 times more likely to be killed by a firearm than white residents. Wave Assistant Director Nick Matuszewski says legislators need to take action on background checks, extreme risk laws, and community intervention efforts to stem the violence. Raymond Newport, Wisconsin Radio Network.
You're listening to Wisconsin Radio Network News.
There was a time when barbecue was perfect. A strong, reliable flavor that could be counted on. But then big manufacturers decided that barbecue needed to be zesty or spicy or sweeter or whatever. If you miss the good old days of great tasting barbecue, we'd like to introduce you to Grandpa's Barbecue. Made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Buy yours online today at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
Here's your Real Country 1430 forecast.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Any light showers or sprinkles coming to an end as we'll see plentiful clouds out there for your Wednesday. East winds and highs in the upper 50s. For tonight, showers looking likely as they develop once again. Temperatures dropping to near the 50-degree mark. Looking for a great place to live, stay, shop, and play? It's easy to get to Worthington, Minnesota. It's worth a look. Right now, it's 51.
Corn bounces off support, but was it all technical? Soybeans disappoint, feeding a record crush and possible ban of used cooking oil from China. Meanwhile, wheat can't follow. And feeder cattle futures finally take a break after an eight-day run to record highs, but will buying resume with a hot cash market? More today on AgriTalk.
Live from the pumpkin patch perched precariously atop Mount Hump Day, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with John Heineman from Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson. And directly following the news, here to get the last word after yesterday's PM show, Brian Split from AgMarket.net. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now filling in one more time for Chip, please welcome Michelle Rook.
Hey, thanks, Davis. All right, you are two for two now.
Two for two?
Two for two. It's John Heinberg, not Heinman. Heinberg.
I think that makes 0 for 2, doesn't it?
Okay, you're 0 for 2.
Two for two would suggest, you know, success.
2 for 2 in terms of mistakes on introductions, that's all.
Okay.
Yeah, so you're 0 for 2 on batting, yeah. So.
All right, that's okay. The Royals,
yeah, Joe didn't step in to correct you, so I am.
Not
so
this
my
time.
Nice streak. My nice streak. Yeah. Is over.
It's nice of you guys to trade off. You know, that makes me feel better.
Team effort here.
Yeah, you know.
Just two gutter balls.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yes.
That's
okay. And thank you for the baseball analogy here during the midst of the baseball playoff season and all of that. So.
Well, because didn't Babe Ruth strike out more times than he hit home runs? I mean,
hey,
I'm in good company.
You can't hit a strike if you don't try, if you're not up to bat. So
Okay. Some would argue you can't hit a strike at all. I don't know.
Well, that's okay. I had a few mistakes this morning in the AM show, and so I should not throw any stones at you at all. That's all.
Well, my house is made of brick, so I say throw away. You know? Just toss away. Let's see your fastball. Yeah. Let's keep the baseball thing going.
Okay.
All right. Well, a quick search on the internet says that Babe Ruth hit 714 career home runs and struck out 1,330 times.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm one for three. One for three. Okay. I'm trending higher. I'm trending corrector.
So the good news is people remember the good stuff, not our mistakes, right?
That's right. That's right. Unless we keep talking about them, and then, that's all they... That's all they can think about, I guess.
Okay.
Am I right, Joe? Have you got a stat on that?
I would say, though, your stat now is 333.
333?
Yeah, that's your batting average right now. Congrats.
Well, I'm consistent. Consistent.
All right. Speaking of a mistake, let's start off talking about the wheat market, which could not get any traction again today.
Indeed. After yesterday's price strength, winter wheat futures were under pressure today. Light pressure on the U.S. dollar limited selling, and traders were encouraged to hear of a year-on-year decline in European wheat exports. Still, December SRW wheat was sharply range-bound as winter wheat posted fractional to slight losses today. December hard red winter wheat futures 0.25 cents lower, all told 4.88 1/4. December soft red wheat down a penny and a half to 4.98 3/4. December spring wheat closed at 5.50 1/2. That's down 3 cents on the day.
Well, disappointing when the dollar's down and you got corn up and wheat can't get off of dead center. That's pretty disappointing to me.
Well, corn futures notched respectable gains in today's trade on a round of modest short covering. While rains have stalled progress briefly, World Weather Inc. says it does not expect a major disruption to ongoing field work this week. December corn did break through resistance at 4.14 1/2 today. Initial support lies at 4.10 1/4. December corn futures 3 3/4 cents higher, 4.16 3/4. March corn added 3 cents, 4.32 1/4. May corn futures closed at 4.41. That's up 3 cents on the day. Michelle, you mentioned up in South Dakota, wheels had stopped turning due to rain. What's your status presently?
We are still out of the field. No rain today, but it's going to take a couple days to... We had pretty darn good rain, so it'll take a few days to dry out.
Well, soybeans drafted fractionally higher behind strengthened corn futures, with support also stemming from corrective gains in soybean meal. The market remains wary of word that President Trump may, in fact, meet with President from China, Xi Jinping, at an upcoming economic conference. However, Trump also threatened to halt purchasing used cooking oil from China, adding uncertainty back into the market. The result, soybean futures stayed near the middle of its latest trading range. November beans were steady, 10.06 1/2. Jan beans also unchanged, 10.24 1/4. March beans closed at 10.39 3/4. That's up 0.25 cents today, Michelle.
Record crush, 197.9 million bushels, and we can't hold the gains. So that's why I was disappointed in the market today.
Well, December cotton today firmed 38 points to 63.83. Over to the livestock's corrective trade weighed on cattle, although nearby live cattle futures did manage to bank slight price gains today. Traders are likely waiting on cash trade to develop further this week before acting with much conviction. December live cattle were 27.5 cents higher at 246.77 1/2. February live cattle firmed 22.5 cents to close at 248.75. November feeders were 65 cents lower at 380.67 1/2. And over to the snout side, lean hog futures were mildly higher with support stemming from tepid gains in pork product prices. The CME lean hog index down another 58 cents to 97.99 as of October 13. December hogs firmed 45 cents to 83.60. Feb hogs up 25 cents, 85.70 at the close. Michelle.
Hey, thanks, Davis. Well, in with our price action perspective today, Brian Split is back with agmarket.net. I guess you didn't get beat up enough yesterday. Just a technical bounce in corn today, you think?
Yeah, it looks like a little bit of short covering after making a new low for the month by 1.25 cents yesterday. Undoubtedly, we probably ran some stops on some of the later buying that's shown up here, risking a new low for the month. So that was a new low for the month by 1.25 cents, but we closed near the upper end at the end of the day. And then we did see some follow through today. So now the test is going to be, we've been in a downtrend. We've been in a downtrend for about the last month. That was September 16th that we made those highs. And that downtrend and the 100-day moving average are kind of converging in that 421, 421 and a half area. So short term, that's really the gatekeeper to being able to retest 430. We do still have the possibility of a head and shoulder bottom in corn, but we got to get through that 430 area to validate that pattern. I don't know why we should do that, but, you know, who knows? There's a lot of stuff going on in the world, and news happens fast.
Yeah, disappointing close in the soybeans, I thought.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm happy that it continues to stay above $10.
Yeah, I agree.
And we actually did this in mid-July. We consolidated right in this, you know, just below 10 to just above 10 for about 4 or 5 days. And then on July 16th, they just bought the tar out of it, and it ran right out of that trading range. So tomorrow's October 16th. It's exactly 3 months later. We spent some time at the low end of the range in beans. Let's see if there's something that gives us a reason to get some short covering. But I would say that November beans, really, if we take out the August lows of 980 that or 981 and a quarter, but sub 980 becomes a technical concern.
Yeah, we've all been watching that August low for a long time here, hoping it holds. Okay, cattle, just some consolidation in the feeders today, you think?
Yeah, you know, the pattern right now on cattle, we established it back in the second quarter. That's rally the first 2 months of the quarter, consolidate. We did it in the third quarter. We're starting the rally at the beginning of the fourth quarter here, so hopefully we've got some gains ahead.
All right, thanks so much, Brian Split, agmarket.net. When we come back, John Heinberg, Total Farm Marketing, joining us as our guest analyst today on AgriTalk.
Everything you've heard is true. Pioneer brand Z-Series soybeans are bringing you the next era of soybean performance. Believe the hype. With a generational leap in genetics, Z-Series is redefining what's possible. Ride the wave. Z-Series soybeans have unleashed unprecedented yield potential and delivered maximum return on investment. Plant Z-Series soybeans in the 100th season of Pioneer. Visit pioneer.com/greatest yields.
If you're living with diabetes and using insulin, you know the pain of pricking your fingers over and over again. By wearing a small remote device called a continuous glucose monitor or CGM, you can reduce the pain of pricking your fingers right away. If you're testing your blood sugar 4 or more times per day, injecting insulin 3 or more times per day, or using an insulin pump, call the Diabetic Health Hotline today and learn about the latest CGM technology. A CGM can immediately reduce pain. It's accurate, easy to use, and helps you make better diabetes treatment decisions. And if you have Medicare, you can get a new CGM at little or no out-of-pocket cost. Plus, get free shipping, and we'll bill your insurance company for you. Call now to receive your new continuous glucose monitor at little or no out-of-pocket cost.
Paid for by U.S. Medical Supply.
Call 800-409-1936. That's 800-409-1936. Again, 800-409-1936. That's 800-409-1936.
Want to get smarter and have some fun while you're at it? Introducing Unscripted and Grow Getters, two of agriculture's most entertaining and engaging podcasts. Hosted by U.S. Farm Report's Tyne Morgan and Ag Day's Clinton Griffiths, Unscripted is your chance to meet the personalities behind the personalities. And with heart and humor, Grow Getters with host Davis Michelson explores ag's most innovative side hustles. You can find Unscripted and Grow Getters on the Farm Journal YouTube channel or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Wisconsin Corn Growers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit wicorn.org and become a member today.
Farmers, now's the time to apply lime to your fields from Lamb Ag Services. Lime reduces soil acidity, improves soil structure, promotes root growth, and improves crop yields. Lamb Ag Services sources lime from area quarries and offers straight or variable rates to match your field's soil needs. When you call Lamb Ag Services, there's no middleman. They answer the phone and do the work on your farm. Call Brian at 715-279-0267 for your lime application needs with Lamb Ag Services.
The chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk.
And welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Michelle Rook in for Chip Flory today. John Heinberg of Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson is our guest analyst for the day. Good to have you along, John. I want to start off talking a little bit about soybeans. I started off at the beginning of the show talking about how I was a little disappointed we couldn't hold on to the early gains with that record NOPA crush figure. But we're on this roller coaster ride on China trade headlines, aren't we?
That's continued to be the main talk of things and what's kind of happening even today. We saw the nice start in beans, 4 cents higher or so. And then Secretary Bessent came out making some very negative comments regarding trade deals with China regarding the rare earth mineral side of it, which was probably the bigger focus of everything here. And that sent the stock market rolling over. And you saw the bean market just kind of roll over again, just that uncertainty if anything's going to come together between us here at the end of the month. At least we're still looking to have that meeting, and you know, we'll see what comes to play out of it. But again, it's just a market that trades on headlines because it's lacking a lot of other information right now. When we get those, you know, positive headline, we're still meeting last night, market's higher. We're unhappy. They're disingenuous. They're, you know, the other terms we use today, not trading in good faith or negotiating in good faith, just sent the market right back to at least steady on the day.
Yeah, the other, I guess, headline that you didn't mention was the fact that the president came out late yesterday and threatened to ban used cooking oil imports from China for retaliation for them not buying U.S. soybeans. And it felt like maybe this morning beans and bean oil caught a little boost from that. But really, it's kind of a non-event, isn't it?
When you start putting the dollars to the situation, again, like I mentioned, with our algo traders, computer traders trading off of headlines, you know, there it was something that probably did support the market, at least on the overnight session into the early part of the day. You know, let's just go look at this year, last year, this year right now. Total U.S. imports in terms of dollars of soybean oil or used cooking oil is about $390,000. Soybean exports to China, even though they haven't bought anything in new crop up for this year, though, is still about $2.4 million. So, you know, it's not much of an impact financially in that regard. You know, last year, you know, we're about $1.175 million worth of cooking oil imports, but $12 million plus of bean exports. So when you put it that way together, it just doesn't seem like it's got a lot of teeth to it other than the headline factor that it probably, you know, caused. And the other side of that, too, you know, those new cooking oil imports, you know, they were actually, you know, fairly strong the last couple of years, but that was because we were subsidizing it as part of the biofuels and, you know, industry side of it. And, you know, obviously that got taken away, and that's some of the reason we've seen those cooking oil imports really come down already anyway. So, again, like I said, really kind of a non-factor when you look at the big picture of things, but it's still enough for a headline story to maybe move the market a little bit this morning.
So was that billion with a B or $1 million?
Million with an M.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, less impact. The other thing that I feel like we were watching, you know, yesterday we had China come out with their record soybean export or imports for September, mainly from Brazil. I guess that should not be a surprise to us. Are they filling their reserves to get by without U.S. beans, do you think?
There's still a little bit of a hole out there for December, January timeframe. Maybe a few bushels they got to cover up here yet in November. You know, so we'll have to see. Again, that might be still an area that we can step into if we get something put together. Now, I'm still fearful that we're not going to make the last year's total, that 826 million bushels. But we need something. And I think the soybean market, again, because it's very headline-driven, I think if we even get an agreement, partial purchases of what they did last year, you could see this market just react on the sentiment side that, hey, we got something together, beans are moving. But if nothing comes together here, the market's going to still stay relatively heavy. You know, I know people like those export inspection numbers, best numbers for the year, yesterday. But those are 1 million metric tons under last year. And right now we're about 1.4 million metric tons behind last year's export pace. Now, let's put that up very, very quickly because this is that window where we really see those beans move. And, 994,000 tons was nice, but not where we needed to be here to really move the balance sheet.
Yeah. If you look at soybeans on any chart, but like a monthly continuation chart, it looks like we've been sideways for, 7 months? So is that where the breakout comes at the end of the month, one way or the other? If you get beans, you go up. If you don't get purchases, you break out of the bottom side?
Right now I'm looking at the bean chart. Just talked with some clients today. You know, I'm a little fearful of a test of that 950 window. If things don't come together, you know, that would be the bottom end. Now what's the top end? 11, 1150. You know, so right now maybe we got a $1.50 of upside here, 50 cents of downside in that sideways range. I think we're going to need to see something fairly substantial in terms of purchases that's going to really bring that carry out down for those markets, at least between now and the end of the year, to get really aggressive in terms of to the upside. But to me, at least gives us a little bit more value to work with. You know, just this global bean supply is still just relative, is heavy. And now we get the expectations from CONAB yesterday, 178 million metric tons. We thought last year was big. Let's throw another 18 million on it and see how it goes. Obviously, that's, you know, pre-plant type projections, but this market's going to be watching that weather very, very closely, especially as we get into the first of the year.
Yeah, I was going to mention or bring up the CONAB numbers because that is a record, obviously, and it sounds like they have a pretty good start to the planting season down there so far, right?
Yeah, they're about 14% planted, according to one analyst estimates I saw here over the, during the week. That's a little bit ahead of last year, but, you know, it looks like most conditions, weather's in pretty decent shape. There are some drier pockets, but, you know, Brazil's a very big country, so they're going to have some issues like that. But at least sounds like right now in the key growing areas that things are off to a decent start.
Let's also talk about the fact that, you know, we've got a lot of producers up in the Northwestern Corn Belt that usually sell soybeans off the combine. This year, they put them in storage. They're hoping the basis improves. If we don't get any purchases at the end of October, do farmers just throw in the towel and then we flood the market with beans or what?
I think that some of that basis improvement we've been seeing is just the fact that producers are putting beans in every nook and cranny they can store them in right now, just because obviously these price levels don't put any meat on the bone in terms of profitability. You know, so that's going to be something we'll have to watch, especially as corn harvest continues to ramp up. Do farmers just have to move the beans, cash flow the operation, and get room for corn that they want to store too as well? You know, there's a bit of a shortfall deficit out there in terms of available storage. And you look at the combination of corn, wheat, and beans and how much we've harvested this year. You know, it's a little different picture than last year, and I think that's going to be something that comes into play, that we're going to have to find places to put this crop for the next few months. Both corn and soybeans, I think that's some of the reason we're seeing the weakness in the market here, is just there's no room for it to go, especially, you know, we'll talk about corn shortly with that extra couple hundred million bushels in that corn market after the grain stocks report.
Yeah, they're trying to tuck it away any place they can, but it's hard to get a size 8 foot into a size 6 shoe. That's for darn sure. So I guess let's talk, what would ending stocks, if we don't get a deal with China, how much does that balloon our ending stocks number? And then does that 1.685 billion bushel export estimate USDA has, does that have to come down a lot more?
You know, obviously, we'll have to come down more. Now, some of the USDA has already started making some cuts into it, you know, from where we were last year. Just so that's really encouraging that it's not going to hit us like a ton of bricks. You know, we got to watch that crush number. That was a monster number from NOPA that came out today. It was good to see that type of number. You know, again, the domestic crush is really going to be the savior in the long run. You know, we need some beans to get that carry out down. Does that push us up over 300? That's a possibility if we don't get any Chinese business. But at the same time, too, what's happening with the rest of the world? You know, when we look at non-Chinese buyers, it's off to a great start, but unfortunately, they can buy double what they did last year, and it still won't touch where we were with the Chinese purchases. But there's going to be a combination of things as we go forward here. But obviously, that lack of the export business probably adds some more bushels, a couple hundred million plus, into that balance sheet. Hopefully, the other sides of demand can help support that and, you know, use those supplies up.
Yeah, we do have export inspections that have been coming out. And I think even with yesterday's pretty good total, we're still, what, 26% off of last year's pace?
Yeah, it's about 1.4 million metric tons right now that were below last year's pace for the same time frame of year.
All right. Let's talk about corn a little bit here as well. Today's bounce, all technical in nature. I mean, if you look at a chart again, we're pretty range bound there, aren't we?
Yes, we are. You know, and again, maybe just we had a nice little turn yesterday. You know, kind of set a new low in here for the last month or so, taking out that October 1st low. And then we kind of popped right back nicely and then got a little follow through today. So it did feel like a bit of a technical bounce. You know, we can also look at a couple other things out there. You know, corn export demand is still good. I mean, mm-hmm. we're at 1.1, almost 1.2 million metric tons yesterday's numbers. Now, down quite a bit from last week, but over double what we did last year in this time window.
Yeah.
So that's at least the blessing right now that's at least maybe good market a little support.
Okay, you mentioned the 200 million bushel extra stocks that we found in the quarterly stocks for corn. I want to talk a little bit about where we're going to balance that out in the balance sheets, or USDA will, when they finally get back to work. John Heinberg joining us with Total Farm Marketing. We'll be back.
Producers and ranchers, this is for you. Now more than ever, it's crucial to manage risk and receive assistance with marketing. And why not meet in a fun atmosphere with other ag professionals for it? We invite you to head on over to Nashville, Tennessee for the annual AgMarket.net Farming for Profit, Not Price Conference. The general session for farmers, producers, and ranchers is February 1st through the 2nd at the Renaissance Nashville Hotel. To register, head to AgMarket.net and click on the banner ad at the top of our website or call 844-4AG-MRKT. There's risk of loss in trading futures under options.
What's the first thing you do in the morning? For many farmers and ranchers, it's checking weather and market updates. Make AgWeb Daily Newsletter part of your morning routine. Not only bringing you essential news and weather updates, but also covering topics such as smart farming and agriculture's next generation. And each weekday, stay informed and stay ahead with AgWeb Market Weekly. Whether you're at home or in the field, AgWeb Market Weekly keeps you connected and competitive.
Delivered straight to your inbox. Subscribe to both today at agweb.com/newsletters and never miss a beat.
Let's go to the markets page at profarmer.com and check today's closes. For December, HRW wheat futures were 0.25 cents lower at 4.88 1/4. December SRW wheat down a penny and a half to 4.98 3/4. December corn futures were 3.75 cents higher, 4.16 3/4. March corn added 3 cents to 4.32 1/4. November beans were steady at 10.06 1/2. March beans closed at 10.39 3/4. That's up 0.25 cents on the day. December cotton today firmed 38 points to 63.83. To the livestocks, December fat cattle were 27.5 cents higher at 246.77 1/2. Novi feeders 65 cents lower, 380.67 1/2. And December hogs firmed 45 cents to 83.60. Visit tryprofarmer.com for more.
I started making supplements for dairy cows in my garage and selling them to local farmers. Now First Choice Dairy Supply distributes products all across the U.S. and in 50 countries around the world. I'm Tucker Silverhorn, president of First Choice Dairy Supply, and I've been a member of Wisconsin Credit Union for over 20 years. I have a master's degree in organic chemistry. I know how to make these products, but I am not a money person. I need a partner with financial expertise, and that's Wisconsin Credit Union. I trust Wisconsin with all my financial matters because they've done such a good job of bringing different solutions to the table, being open and clear with their communication. As a business owner, I wear a lot of hats. One day I might be working on chemistry. One day I might be developing a new product. The next day I might be doing sales. Next day I might be plowing this parking lot. Having Wisconsin Credit Union come down and spend time with me, that's been really valuable for me. I run the science. They help me run the business.
Wisconsin Credit Union, federally insured by NCUA.
I can count on Wisconsin Credit Union.
From raging storms and relentless winds to unforgiving heat, Proven G3 from Pivot Bio just keeps working. Featuring the only gene-edited microbe continuously fixing nitrogen in the presence of synthetic nitrogen, Proven G3's three modes of action feed more nitrogen, boost nutrient uptake, and amplify yield potential day in and day out. Learn more about Proven G3's durable nitrogen delivery at pivotbio.com.
Here's your Real Country 1430 forecast.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Any light showers or sprinkles coming to an end as we'll see plentiful clouds out there for your Wednesday. East winds and highs in the upper 50s. For tonight, showers looking likely as they develop once again. Temperatures dropping to near the 50-degree mark. Looking for a great place to live, stay, shop, and play? It's easy to get to Worthington, Minnesota. It's worth a look. Right now, it's 51.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-5524 and join the conversation.
And welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Isabel Rook in for Chip Flory. John Heinberg with Total Farm Marketing joining us today. And before the break, I kind of teed up on corn that in the quarterly stocks, we found, 207 million bushels more than we saw in the ending stocks number from USDA. And John, how do we get all of that work back into the balance sheets, in your opinion?
You know, obviously, if you look at the adjustments that they made in terms of when that grain stocks report came out, right into the feed and residual side of things. And that's still where the biggest concern in this market comes from, is the amount of extra or fluff or whatever word you want to call it, of bushel demand that's out there, you know. And let's not forget the other side of this in the corn market. Since the first June, we've added over 4 million acres to this pile of corn that we're producing out here. So that's my concern point. I've been talking about that with a lot of customers, not to sound negative, Nelly, but at the same time, let's be real about the situation. We just got a lot of corn that we have to work through here over the next handful of months as harvest continues to ramp up. And that's going to be something that's going to make it very difficult for this market. You know, the USDA, if, you know, right now, currently we've got about 600 million bushels of maybe extra feed demand in that balance sheet. You just divide that by 90 million acres, that gives them about 6 to 7 bushel per acre cut. And we're still going to be sitting on a 2 billion bushel crop, 2 billion bushel carryout. So that's the reality that's here. I'm glad the export demand, it continues to be strong, and that's going to be the salvation of this thing in the long run, you know, because last I checked, quarterly, you know, cattle numbers have not improved and are not improving or getting any larger. And, you know, even the quarterly hogs and pigs numbers were a little bit disappointing in terms of the actual numbers that were out there. So I think it's going to be real hard for the USDA to make that raise in feed demand that they put on the balance sheet for 25-26, given that we ended about $5.45 billion here in 25-24.
Yeah, and as they start to ratchet down yield, then they also have a lot of wiggle room to ratchet demand down as well, right?
Yeah, very much so, and that's kind of what my point was there. It's just, you know, like I said, we can divide that difference in feed demand alone, and that's 6 to 7, that's like 6.6 billion bushels per acre that they could lower this crop. Well, if we're at a 185, or, you know, in that number, you take 6 bushels off, that puts us where? 179, you know, and that might be a number that's a little more legitimate, excuse me, but that still keeps the balance sheet really relatively heavy, you know, as we go into the first part of 26.
Right. Although demand has been very good as far as exports, we're on record pace there, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. And you know, that's one of the things with the government shutdown. We're not seeing those numbers. We're not getting those published sales. You know, through one of my Twitter sources or X sources today, I saw that Taiwan was a buyer of corn today. South Korea stepped in and bought some corn today. So there's some, you know, tender activity still going on out there. Obviously, the biggest thing that we have is that still is going is those export inspections. Like I said, that number was down a little bit from last week, about, you know, 800,000 tons. But we bumped up corn or bean exports pretty heavily last week compared to where we were the prior week. You know, so this is that window we're supposed to be shipping beans in here. You know, and that's really what we focus on. So I'm not surprised to see corn back off a little, but still well over a million tons is a good number, especially given where we are when you look at the history side of it.
Yeah. Well, we probably do have some sales that are coming in under the radar. And I know last week when the bids popped in the PNW, there was, you know, lots of rumors about, oh, is China buying like they did under the radar in 2018 when we had the last government shutdown? But that's pretty unlikely, isn't it?
Very much so at this time frame. You know, I still think, you know, again, we're talking PNW, like who did I mention today? Taiwan, South Korea, where are those bushels coming out? They're coming out of the PNW. So again, we're still seeing a lot of Asian business, obviously just not China and the soybean side, and, you know, they haven't been in the corn market for a while here. So again, we're going to see business up there, but it's probably going to be our other Asian customers that we continue to do business with.
Yeah. So you mentioned logistics and the storage crunch. what happens on corn when we get to the last 20-30% of this corn crop that we have to try to store or do something with. What happens? Do prices go down in that time period or not?
Yeah, a lot of it's going to be depending on how fast we can move things out, you know, with the export side of the equation. You know, that's still going to be the balancing piece to this. If we can average 1 million tons all the way through this window, that'll make that a little bit more less impactful. But again, that's going to be one of those situations. You're going to see the pipeline just kind of get filled up. And that's going to weigh on basis. That could be some of those issues we're watching. Now, watch what's happening with the Mississippi River at Memphis. There was some dredging going on today, and some barge traffic was going to be limited just for today, just so they could get that river's portion open again. You know, we're looking at some fairly dry conditions through that area, and that's going to be a restriction to get stuff to the Gulf. So that's something we're going to have to keep an eye on as well, because all of a sudden now if they're running a half barge through, that's extra cost that gets put back to the basis. Unfortunately, that comes through and affects that cat price.
Yeah. Are we shifting, because we're not loading soybeans, especially up in the northwestern corn belt, on any of these trains to go out the PNW, are we loading corn? Are we shifting our export windows or anything because of that?
I think that's what is happening, you know, and I think the export inspections report from yesterday to kind of confirm that. You know, last year we were about 1.9 million metric tons of beans going out for that week and 500,000 tons of corn. Well, now we are 1.2 corn, 900,000 for soybeans. So you can see that obviously the growth in the corn export demand that's getting pushed out in that window because, you know, that lower bean number, yes, it was a solid number from where we have been for this year, you know, still is just reflective of the overall lack of sales on the big scheme here in terms of that soybean market.
So the bottom side of the trading range that we talked about on the corn market, as you get to the last part of harvest, if you can't tuck it away, do we take that out, do you think?
I'm a little concerned about that right now, especially if this will start moving. If we did see any slowdown in shipments because of maybe moving more beans, that we could see this corn market pile up in here. You know, right now, the way the market was behaving, I was a little concerned about possibly going down to that 397, 92 low that we're looking at, or maybe even lower. I mean, don't forget, September traded to 368 before it rallied back to 399 at expiration. And heavy supply markets like to take the carry out, and that could be something that's in front of us. So I've just been talking with customers. We're putting some cheap puts under the bin. The volatility is low, so options are relatively inexpensive here. Let's let the corn bushels be our upside if we're going to store it, but let's at least make sure we draw a line in the sand here, even though maybe prices aren't still where we want them, but things could get uglier. I'd rather be wrong with a cheap put with unlimited upside.
I was going to say, if you have to make the choice between storing corn or storing beans, do you store beans because you have a better upside potential or not?
That seems to be the million-dollar question that we've been getting at here with our talk with clients. A lot of it depends on the client and what they need, what's cash flow, things of that nature. Right now with the low option volatility, it is easier to maybe pick up a bean call and have that time bought that way. And then you kind of just take the headline risk out, per se. You know, again, though, it's real hard for guys to pull the trigger at these prices, especially when you throw basis on there. You know, I do think if we do get some type of a deal, we move beans quickly. Beans got the more pop to them potentially because this corn supply globally is going to just still be a bit heavy here. And that's just going to maybe keep things a little bit limited unless we really see that yield really come down or the demand just continue to stay strong.
Yeah, when you look at basis on soybeans, John, we're what? Anywhere from a buck to as much in North Dakota as $2 under the board. This is as bad as 2018, isn't it?
It is very much so. Yeah. And again, you know, and our prices on the board reflect that. You know, that's why I'm a little concerned that we got a little more down here if things don't come together, you know, but then maybe we get to a bottoming point in this thing. But again, there's still, you know, we still need that trade package coming together. Big Brazilian weather is going to be a big focus here over the next couple of weeks back in beans. You know, if we continue to see good things going there, and then now we also got Brazil's corn estimates. They raised that up another 1.4 million metric tons yesterday for their fall harvest. So there's still just plenty of corn out there that we're competing against here in these windows.
Yeah. Those CONAB numbers didn't do us any favors, that's for sure. You know, when you look at the corn basis, is that holding up any better than soybean basis or not?
seems like it for the most part, and I think that's just the fact that we need to get bushels moving to the Gulf or going to move into the P&W for the shipment side of it. So, again, like you said, that's a nice little outlet to get some of this newly harvested corn moving and get going to the right directions. You know, so that's at least been friendly in that regard, just talking to producers. Corn basis actually hanging in there fairly well at this time frame. I do think the wetness we've had over the last couple of days, too, is supporting the market here just because maybe that's slow down some of that corn rolling in off the combine.
But just the fact that farmers aren't selling as much of the crop and they're storing more, that also keeps bushels off the market or keeps that supported, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does in that regard. But the thing is, on the long term, you know, we're starting to see the spreads move a little bit. These July spreads been narrowing. You know, do we take the carry out of the market? You know, we've seen that before. Big supply years, guys held bushels back. And then as we get into March, April, May, you know, that window, the carry just disappears because there's ample supplies out there. So make sure we keep that in mind in your marketing plans. Again, I've just been using a lot of very low-cost puts. Put a floor under the bin. Let's hope we're wrong and let our bushels be the upside.
Yeah, and I hate to sound bearish because, honestly, the fact that beans have held above $10 and corn's held above $4 with all the bearish news we've thrown at the market, the markets have been fairly resilient, haven't they?
They have. And that's, like I said, I don't like sounding over negative too. I'm just trying to stay real, you know, right, in terms of what we're seeing out there, in terms of the supplies, things of that nature. You know, this is just a lot bigger than where we are right now. It's going to be what's going on down the long-term side of this. And again, make sure, you know, I tell producers, what's your biggest risk? Let's manage it.
Okay, sounds good. John Heinberg with Total Farm Marketing joining us today. Well, one of the markets that's been shooting to the moon, cattle market. We're going to talk about that just a little bit when we come back here on AgriTalk.
Wesley Financial Group is not a law firm.
Hi, I'm Chuck McDowell, the timeshare cancellation guy. In 2011, I founded Wesley Financial Group with one goal in mind, to help honest folks out of their timeshares permanently. Today, I run Wesley with my two sons, a real family business, treating every client and every employee like we'd want our own family treated. That philosophy has helped us grow into the largest, most trusted timeshare cancellation company in the United States. Fortune magazine even recognized us as one of the best places to work. Why? Because we genuinely care. In fact, some of our former clients were so moved by their experience working with us, they joined our team so they could help others to timeshare freedom. If you're stuck in a timeshare, give us a call. Let our family help your family.
Call Wesley now for your free timeshare exit kit. 800-822-1598. That's 800-822-1598. 800-822-1598.
Are you worried about your taxes? Okay, so I'm talking to those of you out there that have not filed in a few years with the IRS or state. It's time to get worried, and here's why. The IRS is getting back from their own COVID lockdown, and they're hiring more enforcers, and they're going to come after people that owe taxes. So if you're a 1099 worker, and maybe you just plain forgot to file your taxes, you need to call the professionals right now at the Tax Helpline. They are experts at knowing the tax regulations, and their goal is to help you pay as little as possible. Call right now and get a 100% free tax evaluation. Remember, before the IRS knocks on your door, knock on our door. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, make this free call right now.
Call Taxes 321 now at 800-808-9443. 800-808-9443. That's 800-808-9443.
Stream your favorite Farm Journal programs, podcasts, and personalities with the new Farm Journal TV app. You'll enjoy on-demand access to the agriculture information you need from the sources you trust. It's all at your fingertips and on your schedule, anytime, anywhere. The Farm Journal TV streaming app gives you all the must-see Farm Journal shows, all the podcasts from our expanding network, along with exclusive and early view content. You can stream on your phone or smart TV. And you can download programs and watch offline. Go to FarmJournalTV.com now to get the special half-off introductory offer, which gives you unlimited access to all this content with a free 14-day trial subscription and the special price of $49 for a full year. Use code BIGDEAL to get this special rate. Don't miss a minute. Subscribe today at FarmJournalTV.com.
Join us as we celebrate three decades of Commodity Classic, agriculture's largest farmer-led event, February 25th through 27th. Experience game-changing solutions, connect with thousands of forward-thinking farmers, and explore innovations from over 400 companies, all focused on powering your farm forward with efficiency and profitability. Housing and registration opens November 6th. Don't miss 30 years of agricultural excellence in the heart of Texas.
If you're living with diabetes and using insulin, you know the pain of pricking your fingers over and over again. By wearing a small remote device called a continuous glucose monitor or CGM, you can reduce the pain of pricking your fingers right away. If you're testing your blood sugar four or more times per day, injecting insulin three or more times per day, or using an insulin pump, call the Diabetic Health Hotline today and learn about the latest CGM technology. A CGM can immediately reduce pain. It's accurate, easy to use, and helps you make better diabetes treatment decisions. And if you have Medicare, you can get a new CGM at little or no out-of-pocket cost. Plus, get free shipping, and we'll bill your insurance company for you. Call now to receive your new continuous glucose monitor at little or no out-of-pocket cost.
Paid for by U.S. Medical Supply.
Call 800-409-1936. That's 800-409-1936. Again, 800-409-1936. That's 800-409-1936.
Want to get smarter and have some fun while you're at it? Introducing Unscripted and Grow Getters, two of agriculture's most entertaining and engaging podcasts. Hosted by U.S. Farm Report's Ty Morgan and Ag Day's Clinton Gray. Meet the personalities behind the personalities. And with heart and humor, Grow Getters with host Davis Michelson explores ag's most innovative side hustles. You can find Unscripted and Grow Getters on the Farm Journal YouTube channel or wherever you get your podcasts.
In the morning, you're coffeeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking. We're here all day. AgriTalk.
I'm Michelle Rock with Farm Journal and for Chip Flory today. John Heinberg joining us with Total Farm Marketing. Well, one market that has not been in the dumps here has been the cattle market. In fact, all-time highs today again in the live cattle futures. We are just off of all-time highs in the feeder cattle futures, which we hit yesterday. And John, you tell me that that profit taking we saw in the feeders is related to the fact that the futures got ahead of the index now, huh?
I think that's a big factor in both those markets right now. It's just the fact that the feeder cattle prices, well, after today's basis or today's index came up another about $1.45, you know, still $5-6 above that that index level, and we got October coming off here at the end of the month, so they got to get those two together for calf settling. So I think that was a reason we paused today. I think even on the live cattle side, yeah, we were a little higher today, but we were, you know, kind of fighting, you know, where the cash market is right now. Yeah. You know, last week's cash was 235 in the south. You know, right now we're trading 246 on the December, 242 on October. You know, that's something we haven't been dealing with for quite a few months, which is the cash market under the futures. And so I think that's some of the reason maybe we're paused a little bit today, just waiting to see where cash trade wants to go. I'm hearing some indications it's going to be higher. I expect it to be higher. The question is how much. You know, there's still a whole lot of meat on the bone for the packer here, even though retails were up a little bit today. It was a little different when they were paying 245 cash with 380 carcasses. Now we got 360 carcasses, and, you know, cash is obviously, you know, reflecting that. But what this does provide, at least for once now, we got an opportunity. I think it's a great spot for working puts on these early month contracts because, you know, you can go buy a put at 230, 240, 235, 240 in December, and you're at the cash market. If the futures come down to meet cash, your put's going to be working nicely for you. Where, you know, in the past few months here, we've been buying a put, making it reasonable, had to be $5-6 out of the money, and it was still $10 under cash, you know, in terms of the futures market. So that just really made it hard to get coverage in. But now I think here's an opportunity, at least through that December, February, maybe even the April contracts.
Yeah, it's been a long time since that market was inverted like that. So that change in basis is certainly going to be positive for producers. But let's talk about kind of what is, you know, got this market in such a frenzy. I mean, it's been a combination of factors, the latest of which has been this cash feeder market's been on fire, but the tight supplies have been a direct result of the border being closed to Mexican feeders, right?
Yeah, very much so. And then obviously, too, just cow numbers aren't there either in terms of calf crop. You know, so we're in a window where we got tighter supplies than last year, and last year was already tight supplies. So that's why we're seeing that market just exactly kick in here. Now, the other side, too, money flow, I think, is a big factor. We don't get commitment of traders reports because of the government shutdown. You know, the funds really never participated in the last rally. They hit that record high, 156, back in that February window, and they've been slowly walking away from that long position. We had them about 110,000 long here at one of the last commitment of traders report. So they could be pouring back into this market. They finally got interested again. Maybe they're going to run it into the end of the year here. You know, and again, when the funds buy in, the fundamentals really don't matter when they want to push the market. And that kind of feels like what's going on a little bit here, given the aggressiveness of this last buying spree that we've been dealing with.
Yeah, the algos, they just keep trading. It just kind of continues to feed the fire. Mm-hmm. Let's talk as well about what you think could actually break this market. Is reopening the Mexican border to Mexican to imports of feeder cattle, is that the only thing that could break the feeder cattle market? Or is it if we start dropping the tariffs on Brazilian beef coming in? What?
Yeah, I do think still the import side of those cattle, that'll be the take that pressure off that feeder cattle market, that, hey, some supplies are coming, you know, that regard. The other side of it, too, on the live cattle side, you know, let's watch what's going on with retail beef. You know, one thing we just, you know, those Mexican cattle aren't coming across as feeders, but so they're raising them out. And actually, in the month of August, beef production in Mexico was at 442 million pounds. That's an all-time record for them. So is that beef going to start coming across the border in terms of meat supplies? That I wouldn't think that's out of the question in that regard, building our supplies up, especially since we put that tariff on Brazilian beef. You know, we've got a lot of things going with Argentina right now, obviously, in terms of economic aid, things of that nature. Could that open up some Argentina beef getting here? We do have an export quota on them before a 26.4% tariff kicks in. So, but again, though, still, given where the market is, the need for beef in the United States because of the consumer is still buying beef here. You know, that could be some areas that we see that beef production start coming across the border and ease up some of those tighter supplies. And that would, and you know, in my mind, definitely be a bit of a limiter in the marketplace.
Well, I've actually been surprised that President Trump hasn't dropped the Brazilian tariffs, just because if it's like egg prices and he wants to get beef prices down, that would be one thing that would help ground beef prices in a big hurry, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would be. But I still think the BRICS nations, in terms of, you know, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, and that group. You know, Brazil is part of that, and I don't think he wants to show his hand yet there. And I think that's a big piece. A lot of this trade negotiation is those countries are trying to find a way to say, we don't need you, America, in that regard. And I think that is one of those little pieces to the puzzle that we don't know about that's kind of hidden in the headlines.
Yeah. And as far as the Mexican border reopening, until they quit finding new world screwworm cases, that thing's going to stay shut, isn't it?
Very much so. And I mean, obviously, it's getting closer and closer from the last couple of reports that we've seen. It was kind of fell off the burner a little bit with this cattle rally. We don't talk about the new world screwworm as much, but it's out there. Yeah. That's still going to be a piece of the puzzle that maybe past 2026, this thing won't get opened yet as we move into the new year.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you brought up risk management. It's so important right now with these cattle prices as high as they are. Thanks so much, John. John Heinberg with Total Farm Marketing. And Davis is back in, and give us a quick check of the weather.
You bet. The National Weather Service 6 to 10 day temperature outlook has above normal temperatures through the midsection in an hourglass shape, with the most abovest temperatures cutting down through the Dakotas, through Nebraska, Kansas, and spreading out across Texas, near normal parts west, and a little section of near normals above the Carolinas. Precip, it looks dry over that same area, the Dakotas, Montana, Wyoming. Nebraska down into Kansas. The above normal temperature spread further west, and the precip stays about the same, near normal in the eastern belt. Michelle.
Well, thanks so much, Davis Michelson, Joe Stackler, and I'm Michelle Rook. Chip will be back tomorrow here on AgriTalk at 10:06. Join us then.
The Scoop Podcast is where we talk about tight supply chains, emerging agronomic challenges, technology tools delivering ROI. I'm Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop and host of The Scoop Podcast. Join me as I interview leaders from across the ag retail sector. Farmers are working hard for every bushel, and their trusted advisors are by their side. Find The Scoop Podcast wherever you find podcasts so you are up to date on everything ag retail.
When the game is on the line, championship teams know the game plan. They communicate and work together to win. We all need a game plan to protect ourselves online. Talk to family and friends so they know how to stay safe too. Create strong passwords, turn on multi-factor authentication, update software, and recognize and report phishing. Because online safety is not something you want to fumble. Get more game-winning tips at cisa.gov/secureourworld. Then share them with family and friends.
I'm still going for it, even with higher stroke risk from atrial fibrillation and a regular heartbeat not caused by a heart valve problem. Over a 3-year study, Eliquis apixaban tablets reduced stroke risk better than warfarin, and over 97% of Eliquis patients did not experience a stroke. A first stroke occurred in 2.9% of warfarin patients versus 2.3% of Eliquis patients.
Don't stop prescription Eliquis without asking your doctor. Stroke risk may increase. Eliquis can cause serious and potentially fatal bleeding. Don't take if you have an artificial heart valve, abnormal bleeding, or antiphospholipid syndrome. While taking, you may bruise more easily or bleed longer. A spinal injection increases blood clot risk, which may cause paralysis. Get medical help right away for unexpected bleeding or bruising, or back pain, tingling, numbness, muscle weakness, or incontinence. Aspirin products, NSAIDs, SSRIs, SNRIs, and blood thinners increase bleeding risk. Tell your doctor about planned medical or dental procedures. Learn more at Eliquis.com or call 1-855-ELIQUIS.
You're listening to WRGN, 1430 AM, Durand, Mondovi, Wabasha, and